I want to thank you all for having me here today, and I especially want to thank Virginia Harrison for the incredible amount of work and thoughtfulness she's put into making this happen. The poet Muriel Rukeyser talked about how poetry is one of our resources and how our survival now depends on using all of our resources thoughtfully. I want to talk about how poetry is a vital resource, one that helps us see our interdependence more clearly. Specifically, I'm going to talk about the poem we just heard, The Invisible Gorilla, Trash and Landfills, and finally, Goats. And just a small note before we continue, I'm going to use the word seeing to mean the act of perceiving. I do this not only to take up where the poet Lem Sesse left us with in this poem, but because I don't particularly care for the etymology of perceiving, which has its roots in seizing and capturing. I want to focus on connecting without seizing or capturing anything. I hope you enjoyed Some Things I Like. That's the first thing to do with a poem. Simply enjoy it. Then we can see what use we might make of it, what hidden doorways it may contain. You might not be able to tell by hearing this poem that those are two different seas at the end. The sea of waters covering the earth and the sea of looking and recognizing. I invite you to close your eyes for a moment and picture the sea. You might immediately ask, which sea? Where? There is no wrong answer. It is whichever sea is attached to the word sea in your imagination. Now open your eyes and look around the room as if it were the sea. The room is simultaneously the sea and the sanctuary. I want you to think about how you're looking and how your seeing might have changed. Just take a moment and think about what you notice and maybe what you've stopped noticing. For me, the structure of this poem points out many things that I don't particularly like, and then it softens my gaze. Sesse insists he likes all these things, and I believe him. And then after all of those specific small things, he introduces the vast sea and introduces, in fact, a very specific quality of the sea that you can't pin it down. It is in motion, ever-changing, incredibly complex, and vital. Every drop is connected to every other drop. And just like that, he has helped me see how all of the things he has listed are connected. Just like that, he has made me feel the interconnectedness of things I might be tempted to discard. He could have stopped there, and it would have been an incredible poem, but he doesn't. There's one more line, in fact, just one more word, see. With this word, he invites us into the poem, invites us to join in a joyous looking where our gaze is like the sea, connecting everything. I believe the poet is asking us to see with the depth of the sea, to embrace. Lem Sesse is a UK-based poet who entered the foster care system when he was only 2 months old. He was discarded over and over again by adults. And so he's campaigned on behalf of youth in foster care ever since, for them to be heard, to be seen, to even be liked. Got to get my water. You might have heard of the psychology experiment, The Invisible Gorilla. It's an experiment by psychologists Christopher Chabris and Daniel Simons that showed a group of six people, three in white t-shirts and three in black, passing basketballs. They asked the subjects to track how many times the people in white passed the ball. In the middle of the video, though, someone in a gorilla suit strolls through, pauses, and then walks off screen. Fully half of the subjects did not see the gorilla because they were focused on the task of watching the basketballs. Our society asks us to keep our eyes on certain things, mainly white people passing money back and forth. Because of that, we miss all sorts of things. But as we saw with some things I like, poetry can help us not only see the things that society doesn't usually hold up for our notice, like complex feelings, the unfamous, the environment, nature, but to consider and even modify our relationships to these things. When we let poetry widen our lens, we're able to see so much more. Seeing fully the world we live in is a crucial first step in recognizing our interdependence. When I was beginning to think about this talk, I came across The Secret, which is an essay by a wonderful local writer named Douglas Haynes. In this essay, Haynes talks about the all-consuming fire we're creating by burning carbon and wonders how to tell his young daughter about our ecocidal path. Haynes writes, "Like many people, I live my day-to-day life without visualizing where the waste products of my consumption go, in denial of the fact that nothing goes away. There's no other way to live a modern consumer life built on the disposability of non-disposable objects." The first poem I ever memorized was Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout by Shel Silverstein. It's a goofy poem about a child who won't take the garbage out. Mainly, it's a catalog of the trash that is piling up. Memorizing it was a school assignment. Reading it now strikes me that nearly all of the garbage in that poem is food, with the exception of a napkin, cellophane, and bubblegum. It seems like the trash of the 70s, when this poem was published, was much simpler, at least in Sarah's household. The poem had an effect on me, though. It made me notice trash. In particular, it made me notice the trash of relatives who lived out in the country. I noticed that they took care of their own garbage, either by repurposing, composting, or burning. It made me really able to see a small trash can that they had decorated with pink styrofoam egg cartons, because styrofoam does not break down or burn safely. My relatives had not been assimilated into the culture of disposal then, but within a few years they would be. This awareness of trash is perhaps why, when I came across the idea of hell as connected to Gehenna, a landfill with a fire always burning, I was stopped in my tracks. Gehenna has also been described as a place at the bottom of a steep ravine where you could throw things you no longer needed. The idea of hell as a landfill for souls sparked a real horror in me. Treating people as if they are disposable is creating hell. Treating them as if we don't need them, see them, think of them, that we have no earthly or heavenly use for them. In America, we do this all the time. It's our prison system, our slums. Increasingly, it's even our schools. When God called Abraham to offer his son as a sacrifice rather than a goat, we can only imagine he did so with a shattered heart. Now we sacrifice people through abandonment, through carelessness. We hardly register it's happening. There is another goat in the traditional sacrificial ceremony, the scapegoat. This goat had all the sins of the community metaphorically heaped on it, and, or so I'd always believed, was allowed to escape into the wilderness, hence the name scapegoat. But I learned recently that actually scapegoats were pushed down into a ravine, into Gehenna. We are standing now at the top of that ravine, which has grown to encompass nearly everything we can see. Now I want to introduce you to the goat. We find him in a poem called Against Despair, The Kid Goat by Nicole Brown. Nicole's a wonderful poet who's become a champion for the more than human world. This is for Trina and Barb of Animal Haven Farm Sanctuary, Asheville, North Carolina. One, reader, meet the two women who sunk everything they had into taking in broken animals, the gimpy and oozing critters, the ugly lopsided tailless pets, urine-soaked and drooling, zested with fleas, the matted and discarded scrap heaps, left growling and bucking, pissing on everything. The good riddance left roped to a chain link fence. No, I take that back. I want you to be them. I want you crazy enough to try to fix them. Feed and brush and bathe and dip and sweet milk those beasts whole. I want you to try, to always try, despite the odds. Just as you coaxed the docile fat blind pig up on legs that eventually broke from his own inbred weight. Just as you spritzed the mites off a mangy hen that would be limp in the claws of a hawk later that same day. On the hill, a stubborn but sometimes gentle sheep grows cold under a blue tarp. And in your truck is a towel across the back seat for your favorite but neurotic as hell dog, how you rushed her to the vet only to see her put down. 2. No, let's make this real. Reader, I want you tired. Every joint in your body stiff and worn. I want you to finally strip off your filthy clothes. Then I want you jolted from sleep by a cry that in your dreams sounds like an infant wailing. And now, awake, sounds just the damn same. 3. Now find that kid goat, bleeding in the grainy dark. He's no bigger than a lap dog. And on his fist side head are buds of his horns, tiny like 2 popcorn pieces of warm bone. 2 bright spots, the only thing you can see. 4. Flip on the switch. Now you know. With bare hands, I want you to clear the froth from his lolling tongue. I want you to grab a rag, a sponge, the corner of your shirt, anything you can find to sop up the liquid. So much of it, you can't tell what's what. Be it mucus or bile or vomit or blood. As if every water has been brought up for this giving in. As if his body is already a river and rushing away. Now use your arms. It takes strength to steady the convulsing of even a thing this young. And then once his gaze rolls back to white, you know what to do. You know your job. Push together the furred slits of his lids. Close the distinguished horizons of his eyes. 5. Now don't play stupid. You knew this was coming. You've seen it enough times. You're not dumb, just desperate to try to save this little meek goat the farmer dumped at your door. 2 septic and riddled with worms to even be killed to eat. 6. Now get on your knees. Mop it up. As you wring out the rags, don't push away what you know of the sun. Let yourself admit the light. How it made his ears pink and transparent, revealed the secret veins of leaves, how you adored it when they periscoped to your voice and he looked up to give you the small meditations of fresh milk and hay in his mouth. Go on. Get sentimental. If you have to, have a good cry. No one is here. And besides, who would care? Because you try, don't you? You always try. But always that impossible riddle, always the word riddled with the word worms, as if each whip-like body was curled into a question, a wiggling puzzle, a mob infestation of questions, parasites that love a home so hard, they turned that kid goat anemic, fevering, stuttering with a murmuring heart, shitting out a writhing pile of larvae and eggs, little sips, little hooks, little burrows. This was how, little by little, that little goat finally collapsed, arched his throat back as if to be slit, jerked his legs up into the nothing, like the fetus he was just 2 months before. 7. But here's the point. Do not ever let yourself think it didn't matter. It mattered then, as it matters now. Because until this morning rose dull on the horizon, with this useless, good-for-nothing goat now motionless on your floor, regardless, in spite of, no matter, you fed a beast, worthless, a real lost cause, not unlike this whole stubborn, beautiful, fucked-up planet about to seize and drown in its own melt. 8. There really wasn't a thing you could do, but admit it. If you knew, if you really could say he would not have died last night, but would certainly die tomorrow, you'd force yourself out of bed and do what it is you do. You'd count his pills, warm his formula, over the stove, rake out his soiled pen, and with arms wide, you'd bring him a fresh bale of hay. Yes, that's right. Now say his silly goat name, because yes, every living thing deserves a name, and you called him Peanut. A playful way to say he was a flake of the size he should have been. So sick he did not jump or play as he should, but leaned his tiny face exhausted into your leg. Now bend to stroke his scrawny goat neck. Say, good boy, Peanut, we've got you. Now there. Everything's going to be just fine. You know it might be a lie, but no matter. This is your job. It's what you do. It's what needs to be done. I think there are two levels of seeing at work in this poem. The seeing of the women of Animal Haven Farm Sanctuary, and the poet's seeing of those women's relationship to the discarded, the hopeless, the endless work of caring. I marvel at this poem because this is not something a reader particularly wants to see. And so the poet has to tread carefully. In a world that is filled with hopeless causes, with so much unbearable pain and suffering, and seemingly at least, so very little we can do to change that, Nicole has seen the possibility, the beauty, and the grace of remaining tender. She's not simply told us about it. She's helped us to know it through feeling. I believe this poem asks us, if we accept interdependence as our central worldview, what, then, can we afford to throw away? And it shows how poetry can help pierce the lie of disposability, of separation. Douglas Haynes tells us we have to find ways to accept our vulnerability and the vulnerability of Earth itself, to recognize that these vulnerabilities are one and the same. He writes, poetry can help us do this by dissolving boundaries between past and present, subject and object, human and more than human. This capacity to unite what seems divided creates possibilities for seeing differently that may, if we let them, help us accept the seemingly unacceptable and imagine new ways of being. Accepting that we are all connected, not only to other human beings, but to all living beings, can be paralyzing. It can, in this particular moment, and maybe always, feel more like a burden, a curse. It can feel too big a thought to put into practice as a guiding principle. It can feel like giving up your own agency. But as this poem attests, it can also result in such tenderness, such incredible beauty, that we are forever changed. Poetry is a way of knowing, knowing with feeling, knowing with your whole self. It is a good in and of itself, but is also a way to help us confront what it is we do. It allows us to see how we dispose of things, animals, and even people. It allows us to feel both the discarding and what it is like to be discarded. We, each and every one of us, have been broken in some way. But that does not mean that any of us should ever be discarded. I'm going to leave you with one last poem. And it's a very short poem written at the tender age of 7 by a poet I admire very much. Virginia is going to read this. Thank you.
Rita Mae has asked me to read this because she can't do it without crying, but now I'm there too. So this is a poem called Don't Ask by Maxine Perry. Don't ask what the world needs you for. It needs you for you every day.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening and for being you.